Transportation Committee to order. I am Vice Chair Newman. Chair Johansson is not able to make today's meeting. Let the record reflect, the time is 1:35. Today is Thursday, February 15th, 2007. Today we are joined by Representative Johnson, Dugan, Sampson, and myself, Chair Newman. Today we're going to be taking up House Bills 102, House Joint Resolution 8, and House Bill 8. First we're going to hear House Bill 2. For committee's members, if you have questions, we are going to be joined either in person or off-net by Karen Linster, Staff Representative Coghill, Dan Hoffman, Chief of Police of Fairbanks, he's off-net, Tom Clements, Association of Police Chiefs, who's off-net, and Lieutenant Rondi Dial and Lauren Rice from the Department of Public Safety. So if you have questions that you maybe would be better referred to them, I just want you to know that they are here today. We begin with House Bill 102, Representative Coghill and staff member. Here's Representative Coghill. Karen Linster will be presenting the bill. If you could please come forward, state your name and affiliation for the record.
Mr. Chairman, may I just do the introduction and then go back to my other committee?
Absolutely. Representative Coghill.
I object.
But you still have to state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John Coghill from the North Pole area, District 11. Mr. Chairman, this actually was brought to my attention by a person who got a traffic ticket on his way from North Pole to Fairbanks. What we endeavored to do last time we visited this law was to say that you needed to pull over and drive at a prudent speed when passing a vehicle that was an emergency vehicle, had flashing lights, whether it be a police vehicle, a fire, or even a tow truck. And but what we did was we said you either did this or that. And when it was tried to be put before a court, the court said, well, on a two-lane highway, you can't do both, so you must pick one or the other. And so what we did was we tried to clean this language up. We thought we knew what we were saying when we went through this last time, and I'll let my staff go through the actual language set for you, Mr. Chairman, but I think we found a fairly good fix. We've talked to the police about this, and we've kind of kicked it around a little bit and come up with describing a two-lane situation where you must pull over, a single-lane situation where you must slow down to a prudent speed. And that way, I think the police not only have a safety zone, if you will, but also if somebody violates that, we can actually make it stick. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just turn it over to Ms. Lidster.
Okay, and for the record, we are hearing version 25 LS0399/A. Ms. Linster.
For the record, my name is Karen Linster, and I am staff to Representative Coghill. And I think he gave a good definition and explanation of what the bill is trying to do, just clean up the language and make sure that we protect our law enforcement and emergency service providers as much as possible. I would like to bring to the committee's attention that we also have received a letter of support from the Public Safety Employees Association, and that should be in your packet.
Minister, could you also, just so for the record, who else have you received letters of support from or support?
Yes, sir. We have, like I say, the Public Safety Employees Association, the Alaska Association of Chiefs of Police, and from the Department of Public Safety, we have Ms. Rice here to speak to that. I think that we have, obviously, the Chief of Police from Fairbanks also on the line. I have had a number of conversations with him, and they were very interested in this being fixed, so we have no loopholes.
Ms. Linster, isn't there already an Alaska statute to allow for the many different conditions that Alaska has occasionally. But it pretty much falls on the purview of the driver to recognize different hazardous conditions, and they either have to slow down. And I'm just trying to, did the Department of Transportation or who contacted you in regards to this?
Representative Newman, Representative Coghill had said that he actually had had contact from an individual that had been given a ticket. My first contact was actually with Chief of Police Dan Hoffman in the city of Fairbanks, and had felt that the intent of the legislation was to protect emergency providers or our police state troopers to make sure that people, if they had the ability and safely could move into another lane, would do that or would slow down. But because of the or, it has not been very enforceable. They should move to the furthest lane first, if safely possible. Then, obviously, to slow down. The or really gives them no need to perhaps choose the safer outside lane, whichever that may be, in a highway that has two lanes going in the same direction. So this just lets that enforcement be there, that would be the first choice, which is safest, of course, for any of the emergency personnel that may be on the highway.
Thank you. And just for the record, we do have Representative Bill Thomas in the audience. I'm sure it's due to the fact that he wants to make sure his roads in Haines are safe. If that's all you have right now in your presentation, we will go to anybody who would like to testify on this off net. Let me see what we got here. Lieutenant Dial, would you like to talk about this at all?
Please excuse me, Vice Chair. Did you say Lieutenant Dial?
Lieutenant Dial.
Yes, sir. I would like to thank Representative Coghill and Dahlstrom for their efforts concerning this revision to this law, and just say that the Department of Public Safety fully...
Lieutenant Dial?
Yes.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
I'm sorry. My name is Rodney Dial. I'm a lieutenant with the Alaska Department of Public Safety.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I'd just like to say once again that the Department of Public Safety fully supports this, and just offer that currently more than 30 states have laws similar to this that are referred to as move-over laws, intended to help protect police officers, fire, and EMS personnel. National statistics show that about 30% of all crashes occur as a result of another crash, and giving emergency responders plenty of room and clearing the road in the wake of an accident or a motor vehicle collision reduces the chance that another collision is going to occur. This is also important for the public, because for every minute a freeway lane is closed or a two-lane road is closed, it takes on average an additional 4 minutes for traffic to recover. And incidents such as this on our highways account for about 60% of our urban traffic congestion on average. Over the past 10 years, approximately 471 police officers nationwide have died in traffic-related accidents, including about 146 who've been struck by vehicles. According to FBI statistics, traffic crashes now claim the lives of more police personnel than any other cause of death in the line of duty, including shootings. For example, just last year, 49 officers died in crashes across the country. 13 of those law enforcement officers were struck and killed by passing vehicles while they worked outside their patrol cars. And I know a significant number of other emergency responders are also injured every year and die as a result of working alongside the highway. So I would just be available to answer any questions and say once again that we fully support the efforts to clean up this law. Thank you.
Lieutenant Dial, what particular procedures do you do right now to ensure that your troopers are safe when they do pull over a vehicle?
Well, sir, right from the start, our officers are trained at the academy to try to park vehicles in a manner that offsets it just slightly into the traffic lane so that it provides a little bit of a barrier for oncoming cars so that they have to slightly move over to the left, and with the idea that the car will be hit before the officer or the vehicle in front of them will be actually hit. We also equip all of our officers with various warning devices and lights, flares, and reflective equipment so that they can hopefully prevent these type of collisions from occurring.
Thank you, Lieutenant Dial. And I just wanted that for the record to show that Alaska State Troopers are already taking steps for that. And I was remiss earlier to not ask the members of the committee if they had a question for Ms. Linster, but well, do we have any questions for Lieutenant Dial? Thank you, Lieutenant Dial.
Thank you.
We have Vernon Marshall from Juneau. Is Vernon here?
I'm here. We support the bill.
Excuse me. My name is Vernon Marshall. I represent the Public Safety Employees Association. Mr. Chairman, we support the bill. We have provided a position paper. We do feel that the bill does, the goal of the bill is to correct a technical error that is in the statute. The bill clarifies the requirement for motorists to vacate or slow down when coming upon an accident. And we feel that the bill will allow police officers, will promote safety and encourage an efficient, safe, and hopefully expedient flow of traffic around an accident, as well as protect the public safety and emergency responders who may be at the accident scene or performing their enforcement duties relative to their roles. So we support the bill. We appreciate Representatives Coghill and Dahlstrom introducing the legislation, and would be glad to answer questions.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Marshall from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just want to make sure we haven't missed anybody. Do we have anybody else off net? No? Anybody else in the audience? Hearing and seeing none, public testimony is closed. Do we have any committee discussion on this bill? I would just like to state that last year I heard this also quite a bit, and I think it was somewhat known as was a bill by Representative Ramirez that included tow truck drivers. And the tow truck drivers were included in this with a conversation that Representative Ramirez had with a tow truck driver to help make sure that their needs are covered too. And I think that's an important part of what we're doing is allowing the public to come to us as legislators as to what their recommendations are. And I think that's an important part of what we do. Having no more questions from the committee, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Johnson?
I would move HB 102 out of committee with individual recommendations and attach zero fiscal notes.
Hearing no objections, so done. Right now we're going to be hearing House Joint Resolution 8. House Joint Resolution 8 is by Representative Bill Thomas. We also have Stacy Schroeder Hotch, who's staffed to Representative Thomas, going to be here talking a little bit about it. So let's get started. Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. May I say you all look very handsome today. I'm just it's just because Representative Dugan is going to make some comments, so I'm trying to calm him down first. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You included him.
Yeah. I am Representative Thomas from District 5, and I represent every community from small community from Tetlik Chenega down to Hyder, about 37 communities I'm not going to list them all. To my right is Casey Shorter Hodge, my staff. And we are here today to present HDR 8, opposing the enactment of the Washington State Legislature of a shipping container tax. Alaska is very dependent upon goods shipped from ports in the Washington state. We have long, it is, and Washington has long been a gateway to Alaska. In 2003, Alaska was the fifth largest trading partner out of the state of Washington. We account for about 103,500 jobs in Washington and about $4 billion a year in income to that state. Currently, there is a bill before the Washington State Senate that proposes to create a freight, we call it freight congestion relief account and tax structure. This fee will be imposed upon marine highway operators at the rate of $50 per 20-foot van, we call it, in shipping vans. It's $100 for a 40-foot van. And when you look at that, if you've been driving around here in Juneau at all, you'll see there's a big stacks of van, the 40-foot vans out at Northland Marine and Alaska Marine Lines to the south. Throughout my whole district, we have these vans also, and in that way they're going to compensate the terminal operators. They get to keep 10% of the fees that they collect, and then 90% will go back into the state. I oppose this the tax in Washington because I call it devastating. But when you represent a district where one of the communities has as high as 87% unemployment rate, and this tax could possibly be as high as 10% cost of moving goods, is somewhat devastating. And also, I represent probably more fishing communities in Southeast than any other representative. And again, when you put a tax on, the tax will be fall off to the burden of the fishing industry, because we do ship a lot of frozen vans down south to Washington and bring the vans back probably more than not empty. I call it, we already have shipping fees in Alaska, and I said this additional tax, I call it devastating, even though an editorial said it wouldn't be as bad as it says. I says I think it is again. So I'm asking this state legislators in Alaska to support this resolution. We sent it to the state of Washington opposing the potential tax that they want to put on. Just for your info, 97% by weight, 60% of the value of all goods shipped to Alaska is shipped by water. So I believe I got an email from an individual in Ketchikan that said that would be about a $5.2 million additional tax to that community alone. So I'm asking for your support on this resolution and send it to the state of Washington and let them know that we do not like the idea. We've been trading, I call it trading partners. They get our oil and we buy everything we need through those states.
So Representative Thomas, do you have, you've been looking into this, or maybe Casey. I'm assuming that just about everything that Alaska uses, we have some produce that's growing around and other small products that are manufactured within the state of Alaska. Out of what we use in our marketplaces is just average day-to-day citizens of the state. How much of what we use as consumables or even other all our gross products into the state is in imported?
Well, from my hometown alone, I can't think of any other way that we get anything in there other than the vans, AML Linden, Northland Marine. So I would say just, like I said, probably 90-97%. If you get anything else, it's because you go to Whitehorse or if we go to Anchorage or Fairbanks, but those still are shipped by vans also.
So particularly in Southeast, it comes in through vans. I mean, there is some trucking that comes up from the lower 48. Would they be affected if they come up the Trans-Alaska?
I don't know if they will or not, Mr. Chairman.
Unless maybe they started in Washington State.
Well, if they're a van, definitely it will have one. Some of them are vans that just are put on trailers.
Yeah, most of them, I think, now. So in essence, this affects, just it will affect everybody in the state of Alaska in one form or another, and just about everything we purchase in the state. Your estimate, well into the 90s, high 90s, of everything that we purchase, that every Alaskan purchases, will be affected by this and increase our costs.
Exactly. Like Mr. Chairman, I said it was 97% by weight and 60% by value are shipped by the through the vans to Alaska.
Okay. The committee has been sent a CS on this. Do I have a motion to introduce the CS?
I would move that we adopt.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we adopt committee substitute, and I think I've got the right number, 25-LS-0533-C-Bullock.
Thank you.
Have a copy of that?
That is our draft working document on this. We do have staff to Representative Johansson to talk to us about the CSs.
I have no opposition to that. We've talked to staff and to Representative Johansson about the amendments, but Randy can address it if you wish.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question of the sponsor, please?
Please.
If that's okay. Have we...
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have we looked into possibly, and I don't know if this is the appropriate term, but maybe a $100 empty container tax, shipping it back to Washington?
We haven't looked at anything. We're not ready to retaliate, I guess is the word, or respond to what they may be doing. I know in the past there's been efforts to do, I guess you call it, do things to us, and some legislators have taken and introduced different bills to change, I guess, our ferry terminals and things like that.
Yeah.
But we haven't looked at anything yet. We're hoping that the state of Washington will kill this or sit on it.
Mr. Chairman,
First, I'd like to comment to that, Representative. Oh, go ahead.
I assume that most of the containers or all the containers that come up here go back.
Yes, and that's why the fee is both ways. It's $100 through the chair, Representative Johnson. It's $100 out of Washington, and it's $100 to go back. So it's $200 on a 40-foot van. That's why it's so devastating. It could increase, according to one of the shippers, as high as 10% for the cost of goods brought to Alaska.
And, of course, that's even more on a 53-foot van, which I think we have
right.
Even more of those.
one more follow-up,
if I could. Johnson.
Is this only for vans coming to Alaska, or is this everything that goes out of their port?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I believe my understanding, and from what I've been reading, they were trying to target the vans coming in and out, going to Japan and China. But I think we're kind of off on the side. That's where we're number five. They probably didn't look down to as far as five, but to see what the impacts are going to be on us. So that's my understanding, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And just a comment on that is I received a email from a constituent who's working in Prudhoe Bay right now. And this is how far-reaching and how many people are interested in this. Of course, we've heard a lot of the media on it, even more than last year's resolution to maybe move the ferry terminal down there.
Still might be a good idea.
But she states, if Washington makes up a $100 fee for a 40-foot container tax, then let the state of Alaska charge a 25-cent a barrel oil tax. This works out to about $100 for volume and oil it takes to fill a standard 40-foot container. We could call it an environmental monitoring tax for overseeing tanker traffic to Prince William Sound. We could add it to the permanent fund to reimburse the citizens of Alaska for extra shipping costs. So, I mean, there is a lot of people weighing in on different ways that we can affect this. It's interesting. Representative Dugan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Thomas, that's a fine tie you're wearing.
I'm waiting.
Yeah. No, I was just wondering if you or anyone else had given any thought to what we might do if the Washington State Legislature doesn't come to its senses after we send them this resolution.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Dugan, you are looking handsome today. Yes, we have. I'm glad it's not the question you're going to bring up before.
And hopefully we've got this started.
Please,
yeah. Bill.
We have, but only jokingly. I think, you know, we've talked about adding taxes onto the shipping of oil to Cherry Point, which is in Washington. The way... If you read some of the comments out of Washington, it comes out to 5 cents for a pair of tennis shoes. Well, you're not going to buy a cargo full of tennis shoes for Alaska. So we said, well, if we put an oil tax on them, it'll only equate to 15 or 20 cents a gallon. So to us, that's nothing, especially if you're paying as high as $6 for gas in Alaska. So
yeah.
So we have jokingly looked at things, but nobody has been serious yet unless we see something happen here. Then I imagine we'll all be upset.
And I believe Senator Hogan has stated that unless California passes a similar legislation, which they have done in the past, which was vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger, that she would not proceed on this. So we're not sure this is going to happen yet. Okay. Representative Dugan?
That's it. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
No, thank
Representative
you,
Thomas.
And I'll yield to Randy here to explain the amendment.
Randy?
Sure.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Randy Ruaro. I'm staff to Representative Johansson. The CS you have before you on page 2, lines 26 to 31, adds language urging the Attorney General for the State of Alaska to go ahead and commence researching some of the issues that are involved with imposing a container tax. I've inquired with Ledge Legal. They've advised that there are numerous potential legal issues with such a tax. The import-export clause of the U.S. Constitution, Commerce Clause issues, and probably a variety of other things. So it's just asking the Attorney General to start looking into some of the issues. I've spoken with the Attorney General. He does not have any problems with that language or that request. So.
And if I may, that language is contained on page 2, lines 26 through 28, which goes to Representative Dugan's question, is what is the state doing in case this does happen?
That's correct, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Raro. Okay. At this time, do we have any more questions for either Representative Thomas from the committee? And we have been joined by Representative Vic Coring. I know you're doing your best. We do have some members, some citizens off-net who like to talk to this. At that time, we will take their testimony now. We'll start with Everett Billingsley of Linden. Everett, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Everett Billingsley. I'm appearing on behalf of the Linden family of companies.
Please proceed.
Linden's strongly in support of HGR 8, and we're very pleased to be testifying here today, and particularly pleased with the committee substitute, which I think will address some important questions about the constitutionality of this tax. We're also actively working in the Washington legislature in opposition to the container fee bill there. The Washington tax would be $50 per 20-foot equivalent unit on a container, or $100 for the typical 40-footer, or $132.50 on the 53-foot equipment that Linden uses. And that's each way, so you'd have to double it. The tax wasn't aimed at Alaska. The goal of Senator Haugen in Washington was to tax the large container lines that move massive quantities of goods in from Asia through Washington ports and on to the rest of the lower 48. The legislature in Washington is looking for money to pay for the freight mobility infrastructure that roads and rail that gets those containers through Washington and off to the rest of the lower 48, and was trying to find a way to put the tax burden on people outside of Washington, in Chicago or wherever they may be. But the impact on Alaska, I think, was an unintended consequence, because most containers return from Alaska empty. The tax on Alaska is effectively doubled. On a typical AML container, it would be $265. And that's because the vast majority of goods shipped to Alaska move through Washington ports. Essentially, all of our goods are subject to the tax. And unlike the lower 48, Alaskans have very few alternatives to using Washington ports. So we're a little different than the typical state outside of Washington. There's a disproportionate impact. The legislature and governor of Washington need educating about this, and they need to hear about the disproportionate impact on Alaska. And I think HGR 8 accomplishes that goal. It sends a loud, clear message to Washington, and Alaskans shouldn't be bearing the burden of paying for the roads in Washington. last year, Linden Transport and Alaska Marine Lines together moved roughly 124,000 TEUs between Washington and Alaska. And that would have meant the tax would have been $6.2 million in additional costs for our customers. And that's the Alaska shipping public, our customers. That would amount to a rate increase of 10% or more, depending upon the commodity and the destination. And one other point, as somebody mentioned earlier, the sponsor of the container bill here in Washington, Senator Haugen, is working with her counterpart in California to introduce a similar tax. If that happens, it will be as devastating for the Hawaiians as it is for the Alaskans. And I urge you to contact your counterparts there and see if they might be able to take some action to help limit or stop what's under consideration in California. California passed the bill last year, and it was vetoed by Governor Schwarzenegger. He might not do that again. Thank you for your time and for putting forward HGR 8.
Thank you, Mr. Billingsley, for your testimony. And might I add just a quick comment here. Maybe if Washington State didn't work so hard at trying to keep Anwar closed, we could maybe have enough commerce for both their state and our state where they wouldn't need the extra taxes from Alaska to support their economy. They would have the jobs and the commerce that they need. Representative John Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. Do we pay any taxes now on containers that come out of Washington?
Is that addressed to me?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
I'm not aware of any. Oh, there was one question asked earlier about truck traffic. Most truck trailers are put on the tote ships, the roll-on, roll-off ships, and go into Anchorage, and they would be subject to the tax. A small amount of truck traffic does still go over the Alcan Highway, two or three loads per week.
Thank you, Mr. Billingsley. Any other questions from our committee? Thank you, sir. We will now hear from Bill Deaver of Tote.
Hello?
Mr. Deaver.
Good afternoon. This is Bill Deaver. I'm president and COO of Tote Emotion Trailer Express, better known as Tote. And I'm calling in today simply to say that Tote strongly supports HJR number 8. We testified before the Senate Transportation Committee in Olympia on January 24th, opposing Senate Bill 5207. Primarily because of the impact that this would have upon the state of Alaska. The rough numbers that we look at, we move about 200,000 TEU per year of trailer and container freight, which would equate to about a $10 million impact to our customers and to the population within the rail belt. I think if you took the $50 fee and translated that to the entire state, going into the rail belt, southeast, southwest Alaska, the bill is probably approximating somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million. So this is a very, very serious impact upon the citizens of the state of Washington. Just a comment, and I know that Everett commented briefly, the truck traffic that would normally move, there was a question, that would move up the Alcan would not have this tax imposed upon them. It would simply be the containers and trailers that go across the docks in the state of Washington. And I would agree with Everett also. We are an unintended consequence of this, as is the state of Hawaii and the trust territories of Guam and the other islands. The impact to Hawaii is probably 3.5 times the impact to Alaska, and we have been in communication with the folks in Hawaii to oppose this as well. Now, we're going to continue to work on this. I am actually this evening meeting with Representative Frank Chopp, who is a Speaker of the House, Representative Lynn Kessler, the Majority Leader, Bill Grant, Caucus Chair, and Sharon Tamiko, Caucus Whip, in Olympia tonight. And this is definitely going to be one of the topics of conversation. Now, they are in the House, and this bill originated out of the Senate, but definitely communicating to them, and we will meet with the Senate leadership also, hopefully within the next few weeks.
Bill?
Yes.
Representative Newman.
Yes, sir.
Being as you're the person who is actually having conversations with Senator Hogan, or at least other representatives from
yes.
Washington State, and you're privy as to how the last committee meeting went, or the committee meetings down there are going in their Alaska State or their Senate, could you give the not just the committee but all the interested people all around Alaska an idea of where they're at on this? Are they close to this, or what is going on in those conversations?
I would say at the hearings that the vast majority of the people that were testifying were opposed to this, in particular the international lines. The ports are very, very concerned, and I think that they should be, because this would cause international carriers to definitely divert strings to either Vancouver, possibly Prince Rupert, maybe California if they don't follow. But the sentiment that I feel today is that Senator Haugen is still intent upon pushing this, and her request, quite frankly, back to industry is, if you don't like this, then give me some other revenue stream for us to work or to provide funding for the infrastructure projects that we have in the state. So right now, Representative Newman, I would say that the sentiment is somewhat, at least in the Senate, House Transportation, the Senate Transportation Committee, is to proceed with something. Now, they have backed from $50 to $30, but if you took my numbers before, that would take it from 40 down to 24, but that's still, to me, a very, very onerous expense to the citizens of Alaska to pay for infrastructure in Washington.
Mr. Deaver, maybe you could pass on a personal message for me.
Yes.
To Ms. Hogan, is tell her to start pushing for ANWR a little harder, and maybe this will help. She wanted alternatives.
Yeah, that is, enough that about is that. A common conversation, sir.
Any questions from the committee?
The other thing that I would also say is that the trade to Alaska, as an example, into the rail belt, which is where TOTE services, the trade imbalance is about 10 to 1. For every 10 trailers of merchandise we move north, we only have one trailer of southbound cargo. And the southbound cargo generally are household goods, fish out of the rail belt, and some military. But there is not an awful lot coming south. So the statement that was made that the imposition of this is on a round-trip basis is a very, very valid statement. And when somebody says $200 per trailer, $260, that is a very, very valid cost, which is significant to the cost of merchandise moving to Alaska.
Mr. Deaver, who collects this fee? Do you collect this fee and then pass it back off to the state of Alaska?
The way that the bill is written is that it would be collected by the terminal operator. And then they send 90% to the state of Washington, and then the terminal operator is able to keep 10% for their administrative expenses.
Okay.
That's the way that they have it proposed.
Thank you, Bill, because there's always a cost associated to trying to keep the book working on this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Representative Salmon.
Yeah, I have a question for Representative Bill Thomas.
Let's take public testimony first here.
Okay.
While we got these folks off, Lynette, and then if you could hold that question, please. Any other questions for Mr. Deaver? Thank you, Mr. Deaver, for your testimony.
Thank you.
We will now go to Abe Thompson with the Alaska Trucking Association. Abe, are you there?
Yes, Chairman Newman.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Aves Thompson. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Trucking Association, and I'm here today to testify in support of House Joint Resolution Number 8. HJR 8 opposes Washington State Senate Bill 5207, which will impose a $50 tax on each 20-foot TEU or $100 on a 40-foot container. Senate Bill 5207, currently being considered by the Washington State Legislature, will impose a $50 tax on each 20-foot TEU for containers crossing Washington docks in both directions. A 40-foot container bound for Alaska on a round trip will pay $100 each way, or a total of $200. We are very concerned about the impact of this proposed tax. The citizens of Alaska depend heavily on ships and barges to deliver most of the commodities that are necessary in the conduct of our daily lives. There are communities in southeast Alaska that depend entirely on marine cargo. There are facts in the resolution that address the percentages of freight that are shipped to Alaska through Washington ports, and those amounts are very, very significant. As others have stated, we estimate the dollar impact to be upwards of $30 to even $40 million annually. This is a huge hit and will definitely increase our cost of living. Alaska receives the vast majority of our freight through Washington ports and have had a long-standing favorable working relationship with those ports that have provided reliable shipping to Alaska and thousands of jobs and millions in revenue to Washington ports and her citizens. While we realize Washington's need for revenue to provide infrastructure improvements to her ports, we respectfully ask that she find some other form or other method of raising that revenue. We want to be good neighbors with our friends in Washington and trust that they will listen to our concerns. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to testify today. And if there are any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Any questions from the committee? I'm seeing none. Is that all we have off net? Nobody else to testify? Thank you. Now we'll go to in-house here, Paul Foos.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Foos, representing Horizon Shipping Lines today. And there's no question that this tax is a tax on all Alaskans. I can't think of any place in the state that isn't served by a container. But particularly the way it works, about 80% of our cargo comes through the port of Anchorage by two carriers, Toten Horizon, all by container. From there, it's either trucked to Fairbanks or broken down and shipped to rural Alaska. So that's really where it's coming through. And although there's two main carriers, my point here is that this is an extremely competitive trade, and it's partly because of the structure, new structure of marketing and distribution in Alaska through Costco, Walmart, all these big carriers, and they all make their commitments based on cost effectiveness of shipping. So there's really no margin left in those. It's so competitive. This cost will be passed directly on to Alaskans throughout the state. There is no margin for the companies to absorb this cost. It'll be every Alaskan will pay this tax. So we strongly support this, and we hope it'll work, it will help, and we also hope the administration will weigh in on this issue.
Paul, maybe this is not the question for you, but certainly your opinion matters. You're involved in a lot of different situations. But I noticed that, other taxes, like this tax, gets added on. It's just another, some type of a handling fee, or other companies, as you mentioned, other businesses within the state, and certainly not singling them out, but it offers another opportunity for them to raise prices a little bit too. It just seems to have a chain effect like that. Do you feel that way too?
I think that's correct, because those stores are also extremely competitive with each other. I mean, the margins have come down through the big box stores. That's just a fact of life here now. So they'll also be passing it on.
So maybe the little guy who can't buy a whole train load at a time gets hit maybe a little bit harder.
He's going to be hit even harder. And I think another point on this is this is a disproportionate tax on Alaska because we are so dependent on it. The other states, with the exception of Hawaii, I think they're as dependent as we are. But the whole West Coast, they've got stuff coming in by truck or it's locally produced. We're importing almost everything here. So it's a disproportionate tax on us.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions? Mr. Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, do you agree with the estimates that we've heard here that the cost of this is going to be, to Alaskans, is going to be somewhere between $30 and $40 million?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's a, you can count on about 200,000 40-foot containers a year. Mm-hmm. So whatever they put it at, if it's $200, that's $40 million. They reduce it, you just do the math. But that's the round numbers, 200,000 containers a year.
And again, I want to add on to there, just with the discussion that we just had, the smaller business person who is harder to absorb the purchasing of their costs, increase their costs, that might even add a little bit more to that when you figure that in. Representative Dewey?
No. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all.
Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Foos. Don Kubley? Don?
Thank you, Chairman Newman. For the record, my name is Don Kubley. I'm wearing a couple different hats today. I represent Samson Tug and Barge, which is the largest, oldest Alaskan-owned tug and barge company that services from Seattle to Adak. I represent the Masters Mason Pilots Marine Engineers, which strongly support this legislation. And just as importantly, probably, as a fourth-generation Ketchikanite, I just find this proposal in Washington offensive. And I know this is a mom and apple pie issue for almost everybody in this room today, so I'll keep this short and brief and just say that I commend Representative Thomas and his staff for writing a fine piece of legislation, and I'd like to thank the Transportation Committee for hearing it so quickly and moving it on. And I think this is an excellent resolution, and we support it strongly.
Thank you, Don. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Don.
You bet, Chairman.
Anybody else in the audience left to testify? Hearing and seeing none, that closes public testimony. Do we have any committee discussion? Representative Salmon had a question for the sponsor, Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Representative Thomas. Mr. Chairman, the question I had is last year, or I couldn't remember too well, I think it was last year that they had some lobbyists that were, you know, try to open the hand war, and they paid some lobbyists from the lower 48. Is there any way we can put a technique of that sort for advertising and, you know, and lobbying the legislature down in Washington?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, you probably could then end up as a fiscal note in the finance, and it'd be 2 weeks before it gets out of there. But I think the amount of press that we've been getting in Washington and cable news network, we may not have to, but we'll be sending the letters down if we feel that it's appropriate. Maybe I was joking to my staff, I'll send her to Washington to testify at the next committee meeting if we have to, and just let them know that we are serious and that we want to be there. And I think that's probably the best way.
And I'm sure the sponsor would enjoy anybody, if you knew anybody in Washington that you could send a message to contact their legislators, let them know you'd enjoy that. Representative Dugan?
I had a slightly different question, not for Representative Thomas.
If I make just a couple comments for the record, Mr. Chairman, to let you know that the National Federation of Independent Businessmen have a letter of support. Ocean Beauty Seafoods sent in a letter of support, and we have the Alaska State Chamber resolution in support of this. Just for the record, I want to let people know online and here.
Thank you, Representative Thomas, for recognizing the people who do take the time to let us know what their feelings are. That is an important part of what we do. Any other questions for Representative Thomas?
Thank you, Committee, Mr. Chair.
Community discussion? Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, we have a zero fiscal note for the original HJR 8, and I was wondering if we know whether the fiscal note for the committee substitute will be the same.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that question. For the record, again, it's Randy Ruaro, staff to the Transportation Committee. Through the chair, Representative Dugan, I spoke with the Department of Law about that issue as well, and they advised there would not be a fiscal impact.
It's what they do.
That's right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure that this wasn't going to have to take a trip to the Finance Committee.
Good job, for the record. Any other committee discussion? Seeing none, what is the will of this committee?
Mr.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that we move HDR 8 out of committee with individual recommendations and zero physical notes, and I thank the sponsor for his optimism about 2 weeks in finance. And I also want to thank you for bringing this forward and fight the fight, and I'm there with you. Thank you. That's a long amendment, but...
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dugan. Representative Johnson, did you mean the committee substitute for...
I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. Committee substitute, committee substitute for HJR 8 as adopted.
For clarity, is version 25LS0533-C.
Okay.
Make sure that that's straight on the record.
Thank you, Representative Dugan.
We have had a motion to move this from committee. So be done. So we will. Thank you, Representative Thomas. Okay, at this time we will be hearing House Bill 8. We have four people here for quorum. We still have four left here. I guess Representative Salmon had to leave. I was asked by committee chair to hold this bill. So we do not plan to move this bill from committee today. Presenting the bill would be Jane Pearson from Representative Ramirez's office. Jane, please proceed.
For the record, my name's Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Ramirez, and he apologizes for not being here, but he is up in Judiciary right now. The Interior is in desperate need of a new law enforcement training facility. Due to the expansion of the airport facilities and runway extensions, a conflict has been created that may soon slate the current Don Bennett range for destruction. Currently, there are over 30 agencies who share the range, and I provided you with a list of those agencies in your package. And maybe I can just explain to you how antiquated this range is. Today, when an officer goes for weapons requalification, he or she must tamp the stakes in for their target, staple the silhouette to the stake, pace back 15 yards, draw a line in the dirt and snow, and then proceed firing. And that's provided there is not a plane coming in for a landing. If there is, then all firing must stop until the plan lands, and this is not very conducive to time shoots. It's pretty imperative that we take care of the basic training needs of our men and women who we hire to protect us. And when this bill passes, the proposed range will be named after fallen Fairbanks Patrol officer Kevin Lamb. Kevin was born to be a police officer. His father was Lynn Lamb, and he was chief of the North Pole Police Department. Kevin grew up and in high school was a scout for the Explorer Post. He helped with underage drinking operations. He graduated from the Sitka Academy, went to work as an officer for the North Pole Police Department. He then did a short stint with the University Police Department and finally joined the Fairbanks Police Department in March of 1995. He was known at the Fairbanks Police Department for being an excellent officer, both in the field and for the way he dealt with people. I remember Kevin because I was working for a DUI defense attorney in Fairbanks, and Kevin was the one who was always the officer arresting on cases. I think he had the best arrest records for DUIs in Fairbanks. He was a devoted family man. His son Elliot was always with him when he wasn't working. He met and fell in love with his wife Holly and her son Jake shortly before he was killed. And he and Holly were married 9 days before his death. Kevin was known as a cop's cop. He was an officer that other officers wanted to emulate. emulate, excuse me. And for those reasons, we request that you support the naming of the new law enforcement training facility in Fairbanks to be named the Kevin J. Lamb Law Enforcement Training Facility.
Jane, and again, I think it's important that we recognize citizens and organizations that take time to either write us a letter or to show any support. Do you have a list of who has supported this program?
I do not have a list of a lot of people that have supported this naming ceremony. We do have the Farthest North chapter of the Alaska Peace Officers Association, who's been very supportive of this. I know online we have Matt Soden from the Fairbanks Police Department. I believe he's online, and yes, he can speak personally about Kevin and his interaction with the department. In your packet, you have letters from our Fairbanks City Mayor and Dan Hoffman, our Fairbanks Police Chief, and the Interior Delegation, who is behind us.
So, Jane, this is a new law enforcement training facility. Has there funds been appropriated for this yet?
Currently, there have not been funds appropriated for this, and we are working towards getting funds appropriated.
So, if there is one built, it'll be named this?
Yes, that's what we would like.
Okay. Thank you. Do we have any other questions for Ms. Pearson? Representative Dugan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure that Officer Lamb was a fine fella, and I don't mean to disparage his memory by asking this question, but I was curious. The existing firing range is named after Don Bennett, who was a member of the state legislature. That's the same fellow?
Yes, that would be Don Bennett.
And why is it that the decision was made to try to change the name instead of leaving it named after Senator Bennett?
Representative Dugan, through the chair, I believe it was just to honor somebody who had recently been killed in the line of duty.
Jane, isn't this a new facility?
This would also be a new facility. It would be moved onto land that has been granted for this purpose from the Fairbanks airport.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman, but my understanding of this narrative is that if they build a new facility, the old facility will be abandoned. Is that correct in understanding?
Yes, Representative Dugan, through the chair.
So I was just wondering why we're changing the name. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. I'd just like to state that I'm glad that Representative Ramirez is trying to get this done. I know right now in the Mansu, our state troopers and public safety officers train out behind the wastewater treatment plant, so that there is a need for this in the state. No other questions from Gene.
Mr. Chairman? Please.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed as I just perused the letters, and maybe I'm perfectly capable of misreading it, but I noticed most of the letters were in support of building the range and not necessarily naming it.
Representative Johnson, that is true.
Okay. Have you received any opposition to naming it this?
Representative Newman, we have not.
I want to make sure I clarify that, or changing the name from what it is currently being named.
Representative Newman, we have not received any opposition.
Okay. No other questions from the committee? Representative Dugan.
I just want to say one thing for the record, Mr. Chairman.
Absolutely.
I can remember when the firing range in Fairbanks was a high bank across the Chena River. So I'm hoping that whatever solution they come to on this question, that they don't go back to that process.
Representative Dugan, that's where I set in my rifle every year before moose season.
Thank you. At this time, we will go to Matthew Soden, representing himself. Matthew, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Matthew Soden, S-O-D-E-N. I'm with a police officer with the City of Fairbanks.
Please proceed.
I just wanted to thank the gentleman for giving me an opportunity to testify today. I wanted to address, I can probably address this matter from a couple of standpoints. One, from a police officer and a firearms instructor who has to utilize the current range. as well as a friend of Kevin Lamb, as in terms of naming it after him. From a firearms standpoint, the current range is adequate. However, over the last couple of years with the expansion of the airport, there have been plans in place to remove this range because it now interferes with the lengthened small aircraft runway. In fact, it was supposed to have been demolished a number of years ago to put in instrument landing lights, and that was put on hold, but my understanding is that that's now going forward. Because it was planned to be demolished, they disconnected power from it several years ago. So there's a building out there now, but there's no heat, there's no lights, there's very little in the way of making it useful or amenable to police officers going out to shoot, especially in the middle of winter. If we want to do that, we have to bring vehicles out or vans and set them up and have some place to warm up and clean up. So a new facility with the ability to train our officers and have them go in and do classroom instruction would be very much appreciated. And there is a borough range, however, the nature of police work is that we need to be able to get out there 24 hours a day and have some control over who's going down the range and what's going on there. And we don't have that at the borough range simply because it's open to the public and everybody wants to be able to use it, and we don't have the way at the current borough range coordinating or making it so that we have a specific area where law enforcement can train, because we go to different ranges, you know, close to the targets as well as far away. So I would urge you to support the building of a new range just for the ability of law enforcement officers to train with their weapons and to train well and have good quality training, which is as important as training itself. In terms of naming it after Kevin Lamb, I understand that there have been some letters of support of building the facility, but not necessarily of naming it after Kevin Lamb. From a personal standpoint, as a police officer, most of us knew that this was that the range was the possibility of a new range being built was there, but not many knew that it was possibly going to be named after Kevin. And I think that that may be why there haven't been letters of support in naming it after him. While all of us recognize the contributions made by Mr. Bennett and the reason why the original range was named after him, Kevin was a local law enforcement officer, and there are still a large number of police officers in the local area who served with him and recognize not only the good that he did while he was a police officer, but the sacrifice he made when he was killed. And myself more than any, because it was my life that he saved by doing what he did. And so I think that this just honors a local law enforcement officer. It would be used by local law enforcement officers, and it would be a fitting tribute to Kevin and to his family, many of whom are still here in town. His son Elliot's here in town. His mom recently moved back to Ohio, but the possibility exists for her to come back up here, and I just think it would be a very fitting tribute to Kevin to name something that the other law enforcement officers would be utilizing on a regular basis after one of our own. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Soden. Do we have any questions from the committee? Thank you, Mr. Soden.
All right, thank you.
Do we have anybody else who wants to testify this, either off-net or in the audience? Hearing and seeing none.
Sir, this is Officer Jim Janke in Fairbanks. I'm with U.S. Customs. I'm chapter president of APOA.
Thank you. Please, again, state your name and affiliation for the record. Name and affiliation for the record.
It's J-A-N-K-E, first name Jim or James.
Please proceed, Mr. Janke.
Okay, I started this a couple years ago trying to get this range because there's a tremendous need for the law enforcement community in Fairbanks to have some place where they could go train and be proficient in this area. And I'm a retired police officer out of Ketchikan, and we had a very nice range down there. It was one that was built by the Coast Guard. And I was taken back by the quote-unquote the range we have here, which is basically three berms of dirt piled up and a building with no running water, electricity, or anything, and that's where we're supposed to go talk and figure out how we're going to shoot and everything. It was made a little more complicated by the fact that with the expansion of the airport, there's a very strong possibility and a reality that FAA is wanting to run some lighting through our present range. And as it is now, they've extended the range for the smaller aircraft. And so I'm not sure very many of you are aware of what we have to do, but we have to qualify periodically, 3 to 4 times a year. And these qualifications involve a timed shoot. Well, we have to post one individual to yell cease fire as the airplanes come over so that we don't have any issues with that. They're that low and that close. So this is a very much needed range training facility, and I have tons more stuff to I can give on that if there's any questions. This does cover all of the law enforcement agencies in the interior, whether they're state, local, or federal, and it also covers the training facility for the school. The university trains a law enforcement class periodically.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke, and I just want to make sure that our clerks are able to keep things straight here. Your affiliation or representation, who are you representing?
I am the chapter president for Alaska Peace Officers Association and a retired police officer, and I am also a U.S. Customs officer at the airport here.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke. We do have a question from Representative Johnson.
Mr. Jenke, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you have a position on naming the firing range in the event it's built?
My position is the sacrifices that law enforcement give to the community, it goes without saying, but the ultimate sacrifice is the sacrifice that Kevin gave to this community. What a better way, what a wonderful thing for the people remaining to honor him and to keep this thought in mind when we go out there and practice this very serious business.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Jenke. Any other questions? Thank you, sir, for testifying. Do we have anybody else off net? Hearing none, do we have anybody in the audience? Seeing none. That concludes public testimony. We will now go to committee discussion. Seeing no discussion from the committee, we will hold this bill. So at this time, I'd like to thank everybody for attending. That concludes today's meeting. The time is 3:43.